welcome to Season 4, Episode 16 of the Practical 365 Podcast. With me, Steve Goodman, and Rich Dean. Hello, Rich. How are you?
Hey, Steve. Are you with yourself, too? Is that your AI talking?
Oh, I deleted the one I trained on my voice. I've got a really terrible one that I could fire up. But no, that's not the one I trained. I was at tech last week, actually. I did mention one of these new voice text-to-speech models that people can train. What I didn't mention, though, in my session was it sometimes doesn't do a very good job at all of reproducing somebody's voice. So I could actually try and make you laugh if you want.
What kind of sampling? Just a few files?
If you just throw something at it, anything at it, it didn't do such a good job. So I can show you what I sound like with a real bad version of this, where I just uploaded anything from the podcast to see what it did. But I guarantee you won't be particularly impressed. Let's have a look. Steve 2 is my second terrible attempt. Let's see if it'll play that.
Hello, Rich. How are you?
That doesn't sound anything like me. No. Let's try another one.
That's a slightly upgraded version of...
Hello, Rich. How are you?
That's terrible, too.
Step down, say. Tiwasin Jadot and Adasi.
That is my voice, so it's got that bit. But welcome to the... We've completely went off topic already this soon into the show. Let's see how well it does. It's gonna. Well, I bet it's gonna sound like this. I bet it's gonna sound like this. Welcome to the Practical 365 Podcast. And I'll press it.
Welcome to the Practical 365 Podcast.
I love how it added the extra.
I'm gonna say that this.
Welcome to the Practical 365 Podcast.
I think the problem is that the base model for this Kokai TTS XTTS V2 thing is the model has an American accent and clearly an Austrian accent.
Welcome to the Practical 365 Podcast.
I love that one. That's the best.
But it's like 6 seconds of audio that you can use. So you get the right 6 seconds of audio. And it's going to sound like your CEO. And it's going to be easier. I bet I could get it to do you a lot more easily, Rich.
Because of the American.
Yeah, because of the American accent. But
hi, y'all. How you doing?
Welcome to the Practical 365 Podcast.
It's got this bit of the voice. It's got this bit of the... I was probably trying to be too clever. It's like, listen to me, I'm Steve. And then it's just taking that bit rather than the full range. You've got to get the full range of it. So that was at tech last week, where I did mention that it sounded scarier when I said it on stage without showing it. Perhaps less scary, but bad example of bad AI.
What was your tech session about?
My tech session was how your Entra ID can be compromised by vicious, evil actors. And actually, a few things that we're talking about in the show actually talk about some of the stuff that Microsoft have brought out that are absolutely relevant in making sure that you don't get compromised. I say people wouldn't believe this, but I've seen stuff going around the rounds on things like Facebook where people are making terrible AI pictures saying, this boy managed to make a car out of plastic bottles. Isn't it wonderful? And people are like, wow, what a little genius. And it's just a terrible AI picture. You never know who's going to get convinced. You might not get convinced, but your payroll department might.
Well, they're getting better and better and better. So, but I mean, if you ask any of the free stuff now, I mean, they can't even still get wording or lettering correct 90% of the time.
They're getting better at it, though, slowly but surely. So you end up with, I don't know, perhaps it will say the Practical 365S podcast, and it'll have a picture of me and you with two noses each and 17 fingers and pig's feet.
Yes.
merged in into one pink, person, in like the human centipede. In the
background, just for good measure.
it's absolutely, some of it's good, some of it's bad. But this is the thing, isn't it? What you do expect, though, is that people who are trying to attack your organization will obviously know these things, potentially be better resourced than Steve with using his graphics card to try and generate text. And also, they're going to be motivated to try and make these things work well. And either way, say they're trying to make a picture of something or a voice of something, then there's something in it for them, which is money at the end of it. So they're going to spend longer than I did, you know, to do this stuff. Or, again, they're not just trying to fool people on Facebook. So tech was good. Talk about hybridization of your organization with sessions on all sorts of things like Active Directory. You know, you mentioned on our show about it being 25 years old as well. You weren't the only person to mention that. It just makes me feel old.
I guess it depends on how you count it, right? So we're talking about the 99 preview release, and that officially is April. So we're going to do a practical 365 article on the history of it, its evolution, and trying to look at what its future may look like, because that's definitely unknown. But there's lots of predictors out there for what will be eventually. Yeah, but we got some good quotes, too. We reached out a few people in the industry, Sean Metcalf, to name one, to get some insights from his perspective. So should be pretty good. I know they hate my verboseness, and they were like, this is not 1500 words. I'm like, yeah, it's slightly more. This is a historical document, man.
Oh, dearie me. Actually, on the Internet Archive, at one of my old employers, it was a university, so they were, but at the time, I think when I started there, it wasn't long past the days when they'd have an NFS server open to the entire internet. You know, only 5 years since they stopped doing that because somebody wanted to share stuff. Bear that in mind, because I suppose it's not potentially good security practice these days, but in the spirit of openness, we've published all sorts of stuff like the design for our Active Directory, which sounds like a stupid idea, but it's still on the Internet Archive for what was then. And I know that it's different now because I changed it from that to something else 10 years after. But I still love the fact that it still looks like it was the first, maybe 2001, and it still sort of looks like actually, you know, a good attempt from somebody that has read everything they need to pass their MCSE back then. So it had the root forest with the subdomains and all that sort of stuff, and all the lots of thinking about deny the apply for group policies, naming conventions for everything. And I must have only been 22.
Architecture and those best practices have changed so many times. A lot of old architectures that no longer supported, and then going from the single forest and then back to the single forest as a recommendation.
The forest, it's been a journey. Root and subforest, well, subdomains, and then moving the back in. And of course, there was a time when actually it was quite easy to move all the objects from domain to domain into the root without affecting anybody. And then all those tools at some point became not recommended as all the applications that were connected to AD got more complex. Dear. Fun days.
Zero trust now. You know, you also have the recommendation to segment to control the blast radius. So, it's been an evolution. I don't know. I think the most interesting thing is the differences of opinions on the future of Active Directory.
Yeah.
You know, whether, you know, how long does it have? Because it has to be eventually circumvented by something else. I mean, it is the biggest attack vector. You know, it is where we're being attacked. It has the a legacy backend that isn't designed for what modern cloud environments have. So eventually it has to give way to some sort of other integrated authentication and access management for on-premises.
But
I don't know what. Well, I mean, if they perceive AD as one of the biggest threats, you know, and attack vectors, Microsoft does, right?
Yeah.
What is the solution? So they made the investment, last year so before last year's investment, security, performance, and scalability, they hadn't invested in ADDS for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Our biggest customers are complaining about these three areas of performance, scalability, and security. Let me fix all of what, so it has a patch for the next 5 years so that we can transition them off for everybody to the cloud that can go to the cloud, and those ones that need to stay with an on-premises hardened infrastructure, here's your solution. What is it? Decentralized identity with some sort of component down here? I don't know what it is, to be honest, but there was a lot of varying opinions about, you know, how long it will be around. I think that if I had to summarize what I heard from people talking to experts out in the field, it's probably the consensus is most organizations, even if there was a plan today, couldn't get off AD for 5 to 10 years with legacy applications and dependencies and you know, maybe some of the other stuff, managing devices, but that's getting easier too. But I don't know.
I mean, at Tech last week, one of the questions obviously to the audience is, you know, who's completely cloud only? I think last year, obviously there were people, but in the audience, people weren't putting their hands up to that. But this year, you know, a few in the audience, each country did. So, you know, and I think a couple of them, I think in Paris, I asked the chap who was right at the front, and people are doing either Greenfield and they're breaking out companies. You know, Quest will have a lot of customers who are moving to cloud only for the carved out piece of the organization. But it's having a offline directory service that does not rely on a paid subscription to Microsoft for security features, or an internet connection. Other solutions are
there? Case.
In it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, OpenLDAP and Kerberos? That's not better. Obviously,
they got to get rid of Kerberos and NTLM to close those gaps at some point. And that's the core of authentication to Active Directory. So they got to, something has to give. Mm. It's too much of a juicy target. I don't know. I would hope there's a, you know, genius engineers at Microsoft coming up with a decentralized model. I don't know, but.
Something, I mean, that is the decentralized model, though, isn't it? Active Directory on premises, all of these synchronizing to Entra ID, that is the decentralized model in effect. And, Samba domain controllers running their form of AD are not going to be any better in terms of, they'd be easy to compromise in for some people who, you know, who are skilled at working Linux boxes.
Again, like from an architecture perspective, how can we harden them beyond how they've are? I mean, today, if you look at like this year's kind of security market, the big message that I'm hearing from all the different spaces is prevention, where last year was a lot of detection and response. And here it's all prevention. And a lot of that has to do with identity prevention and spaces like Active Directory. So I don't know whether these things are going to come to fruition or not.
Maybe you've got a long-term cache, you know, like branch cache, but for authentication. So it keeps a certain level of stuff. But users have had to log in at once, at least once on-prem, for it to work offline, so that it's not solely reliant on a refresh token. So while it can still contact that, it can refresh the token from that, it can reissue it, but not accept new logins or something like that. There'll be something along those lines that's basically a read-only domain controller that doesn't have any way of synchronizing any more data than it would have if someone had compromised the machine and that the user's got an access in that data. So no, yeah. So there'll be something like that. I mean, that would make sense, wouldn't it? From sort of minimum.
It's just that AD is like Swiss cheese at this point. There's just too many holes to patch at a consistent time. As much change is occurring on a daily basis, more holes are open and more Swiss cheese. And then you got to look at the drift from that. It's just like this unwavering, undaunting task to keep it patched and secure and with the right access model in place for every single person, even with PAM in place and all the other extra tools that sit on top of it to control privileged access. It's just, I don't know. That was kind of the conclusion I came to. Is like something has to give at some point, but I don't know what that is.
Come back, NIS, all is forgiven. For those that don't, like a Unix password file is literally like encrypted passwords. The Geos field, like, which is
I mean, password list is going to push AD out of.
No, a password too. List, like yeah. It's like if you go onto alerts, which would type cat x etc shadow or the password file with the hash, that is like NIS's network information system, sort of database for like some systems, which theoretically there used to be like the Gina DLL login libraries that NT4 and up to about Windows XP machines, you could get them to log in to a Unix password file on the network as a primary authentication method. Now, I don't think that would not be better than AD. It doesn't give somebody it doesn't have a way of actually granting somebody access on another machine though, through its compromise, apart from being a local user. So maybe there's something in that. Come back, text files, all is forgiven. And when I used to look after that alongside AD and stuff like that, that would serve, way in excess of 25,000 users. A text file.
So part of the reason that made me a little skeptical on AD's future, or what that really the future is when we reached out to Microsoft, like I said, we reached out to various, acolytes to get quotes on different eras of AD. And we reached out to some Microsoft executives to get a sense of, the future of AD, to get a quote, right? And we basically got the stonewall of like, we don't want to give a quote on the future of Active Directory. So, I mean, I talk about it in the article when it comes out. But it's not that it means anything other than we didn't want to give you a quote. But I think usually they're pretty like, yeah, sure, happy to help. So because they've always been a very collaborative partner. So
I think it is one of those things where it could be commercially sensitive to say something or nothing.
Yes. And yeah, that's what I chalk it up to.
And it's controversial. There's people that won't like the answer, whatever you say with this topic, isn't there? So on the outside as an MVP or what have you, it's easier to...
Suspicious nature makes me think other things.
Whoa. I don't like... If they say, oh, we've got no comment on that, then there's not much to say, is there, to it? But you can go speculate in as many different areas as you want because they've not actually given any point. So you can go and go, I think they are going to be moving to, they're going to standardize on OpenLDAP, aren't they? They had that We Love Linux thing a few years ago. Satya Nadella's been quoted as saying that we basically own all the way around OpenAI now. Ha-ha, we've got them cornered, was the gist of it that I got from those quotes. So, yeah, I'll probably move to OpenLDAP, man. That's the way forward. Forget Kerberos, not even that. It's just basically a directory. And you just keep a little copy of it. It's like lightweight directory services, but harder to use. Angrier people that respond to you if you need support from an open source community. And you can roll your own however you want it with the source code. Maybe just download a dodgy version off GitHub if you fancy it. That's how you get compromised. You can self-compromise yourself.
We want to go to a more secure model, not a less secure.
The problem is people won't know how to set it up.
They don't know how to just set up AD today.
It's
getting worse.
And that's the difference, isn't it? If you don't know how to set up one of those open source equivalents, then you don't end up with it being set up. Whereas with AD, its biggest problem is not that it it's built of some of the same components, right? Admit Kerberos libraries or whatever, it was under, you know, back to that, it's got far more potentially secure features. It's just anyone can set up AD. Anybody. You know, I could ask one of my kids to do it, and they could set me up an AD domain controller.
Oh, especially.
And we, you know, we still, I bet there's still people who are listening to this podcast who their dirty little secret is they log in daily at work as a domain admin. If you're listening and you know that's you, I know you're smiling now a little bit and also a bit embarrassed. People do that, though. We know that they do that. Everyone knows that somebody in an organization will just be like, still using we'll be fine.
Single account for everything.
I mean, I'm not saying that, everyone's doing it. I'm saying there's still people who are. And that is really bad. That is really bad. But I know that saying it, they know that this is bad as well. They just don't, you're just like, well, they're just like, I'll be fine
that's
though.
That's what I mean by that whole talk about prevention. Like, that's the big topic is there's so many it's a Swiss cheese.
Yes.
And things like that is a major big hole in that cheese.
Yeah. And it's like people driving.
And it's the easiest, simplest thing to remediate.
It's like anyone that drives 120 miles an hour down the motorway or maybe double the speed limit or whatever, they always think, well, I'll be fine. What happened to me? I'll be fine. And most of the time they are. Until once they aren't. And that's the same theory, right? As well with, you know, setting it up, it doesn't matter, we'll be fine. The less changes I make to it, the better. Or maybe if I give everybody domain admin, then it will never be my fault if we get compromised. I don't know what goes through the head of some of these people because you do see some of that stuff, don't you?
Well, I think that's a fair compromise, especially when the stuff that came out from Microsoft Secure, the security exposure stuff we were talking about. I think that's, if you look at what the preview is now, it really is it. Because the pitch is we've consolidated a lot of this information. Now you have a single dashboard to look at all of your attack paths and most critical assets, not just identity assets and other different types of assets, and look at it holistically and have a better scoring system to know whether your posture is good. And the complaint really, when you look at it, is, okay, here's another portal that's consolidated other portals that are linked to other products that are dependent on these other products that now has not only secure score, but this new security score on top of it that interact with each other. Like, is it, and you're talking about the SMB or the ones that just have a domain owner, and that's all he's logging in with that single account. Is he going to look at this and look at the initiatives that come out through this? Because they have these nice little packages, like these campaigns, where you can go through initiatives and say, oh, this threat actor does these things, I better patch. Or this particular malware does this, or this ransomware campaign does this. Are they really going to go through those exercises for their, you know, 150, 500?
I think the challenge...
Or is it just too much?
Like, I think there's always, like, you know, like good advice I had it's not necessarily bad advice, but to some people it would seem like, why would that be advice? We never start making any changes to the systems on a Friday afternoon because we don't want to have to work the weekend. Whereas to some people, some people quite right will say, well, we do all these big changes at the weekend so that it doesn't affect the users. Whereas, there's different schools of thought. But also, you know, I spoke to a customer not that long ago, and I could, it's a project manager explaining stuff. And I might mention this in the last podcast actually as well, briefly in another context. But like, if we make, you know, what the IT person said to me, the project manager, was, if we make any changes, our scripts, it'll break the machines. That's their worry, isn't it, though? That if you make the change, you're going to look bad. People only ever hit IT. Like I noticed, with Copilot projects and adoptions, people are really pleased with the time they save. And it's so different to, say, an Exchange or other infrastructure upgrade project where if you do the project and it's a success, no one says thank you. Nobody, because a good job means no one noticed. So
that's right.
If you make especially changes for security or you fix things, email, security, things in advance. Like, for example, years ago, someone listening might remember the same thing happened. NT4, we had McAfee back before McAfee meant also a dodgy criminal bloke. And there was one of the updates that came through, and we pushed them out every day, central server before EPO, and pushed them out. It sort of in 2002, maybe. And it made every computer in maybe across 20 departments blue screen, and they wouldn't boot up again. So you have religiously kept people protected for years against these problems. All they go and see is, what have IT done? So that's a reason why people don't do these things, because experience shows that you just can get hit over the head, metaphorically speaking, by people if you mess it up. And when there's only one of you or two of you, like in that situation, two of us are basically running all of the IT application people, but
yeah,
it was me but and
no change management whatsoever.
But it was me
no
and change. Well, we had it was me and Dave.
Yeah.
Good man and good child. It was for us to go around all these computers and fix it. Basically, there was no one else. We could ask James, the app developer, or Liz in the other office. They wouldn't have helped. That pain of, I think there was 1,000 people or something we were supporting. That was our pain that day. We had to figure out a way to undo all of that. We weren't alone, obviously, in terms of organizations globally. We had support to phone up for the product. But from our perspective, we might be walking around all those machines and rebuilding them throughout the next 2 days. The moment it happened. So that's my mindset that I'm imagining for people who don't do these changes because they know there's only one of them. They're not an expert on everything. They've not got any help. The downside of it going wrong is they don't see the family for a week.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good segue into the announcement Microsoft made with the Microsoft Managed Conditional Access Policies.
Yes.
Right. Because I mean, that's part of that answer to that SMB or those two blokes, that you're talking about that just simply don't want to make those changes because it's going to impact them.
Blokes, or it's I'm going to say, but I know that we have listeners who I've met and spoken to, not just bloke people. All right, I've spoken to people who are listeners who do all the same. They have all the same bad days. Regardless of blokes or blokes. I know that wasn't intentional, obviously, Rich, but I should mention.
Yeah, thanks for pointing it out, Steve.
Yes, I know. But if I hadn't,
your language,
then you'd listen back and you'd be like, oh, I didn't mean it that way. Because I know you don't, because you work with a great team that are not just blokes. So just, absolutely. Or we just record that little bit again and not have this bit. Start that bit again. Before. And I'll just edit it properly because then we don't need this awkwardness. We're going to, so those people in SMB, the people in SMB or the IT admins in SMB, whatever you want to start that bit. And I'll go like that so I can do it.
Sure. I mean, that's a good segue into the topic of the managed conditional access policies, right? Mm. They're releasing those now for real. So it was back in November when they originally talked about it, and it was on. Alex Weinert talked about it on our podcast.
Yes. Which
was probably episode 3 or something, I think, of this season. Mm-hmm. But now they're releasing them. They're going to give us more time because organizations need to adjust. Of course, we knew that was going to happen. And what was the other thing? They're not going to count against the policy limits that you have to adhere to. So I think that's great news because that's a real concern there. But I mean, that is the answer to some of these SMBs, right? Where they don't have the time to really do this. So this is, I think it's a great, balance to not forcing customers into things they can't or won't do, but really trying to protect them against themselves.
Or protect you as an admin in the one you've got some plausible deniability, right? In a way, mm-hmm. You've made the decision but at some point, also, you and the organization have made the decision to use Microsoft services. And when it all goes wrong, you can't blame Microsoft if you opted out of this and said, no, I'll keep up to date with all of this myself. And the reality of switching all of this stuff on isn't actually as bad as you think unless you mess it up. And these are not sets of policies that, unless there is something weird that you did intentionally, it's going to cause you a big problem. But again, I've had customers where similar sort of situation, you know, one or two people are looking after the majority of the infrastructure, where they've oohed and ahed about switching stuff on. And then when they finally did, like everything else, it's not even about the planning of it. It's about the worry about the problem it might cause. And actually, it was all fine.
And I don't think these, if I recall correctly, it's only like three policies that are automated, right?
Yeah, and this is the thing. This is the problem.
It wasn't.
But if you don't do it wasn't this,
you a lot to check.
No. I mean, one thing about security, like Security Copilot, is here now, isn't it? And
yes,
talking of SMBs,
it's officially GA, right?
Yeah. So, but when if I talk
April 1st, sorry, April 1st is officially GA.
It's April 1st is GA. It's in preview now, and you can get to it. You can visit it from your Microsoft 365 port admin portal as well. I know, like, if I was talking to an SMB owner, like someone who owns a business and looks after IT, then they wear many hats as a business owner, just like an IT admin who does a lot of things. And this is what Security Copilot is, in a way. It's being able to have something that can help you wear extra hats. All these copilots aimed at IT folk are specifically for giving you that extra abilities. Giving you the network expert or the security expertise that it can complement what you probably already know. Or do the, you know, what I see with the copilot in the business side is it's like somebody having an assistant who can very, very quickly look through a lot of information and pick out the most useful bits or write something for you based on it or give you an analysis of it. And a lot of these copilots, that's the intent of what it's able to do. It's able to analyze a lot of things to give you the ability to see the needle in a haystack.
I think that's part of it. And I think any decent LLM could do parts of that for sure. But I think part of the thing or power that they're touting is all the, you know, what was it? I don't know, trillions of 70 trillion signals every day or something to that effect. And with all the other information coming from the other security solutions within the stack, I think that's probably where it's going to shine the most or add the most value. It's correlating that information because we were just talking about there's, even though they've consolidated portals and they're doing a better job and they put these in these different stacks with Purview and Entra and Defender and all of those pieces, it's still a
stacks
lot.
Stacks of stacks. I got a question for you.
Maybe this can bridge that.
you mentioned all these signals and you think, okay, if they're using large language models with that, it's not the most efficient way, is it? Like every single signal has to invoke.
Well, it's just the LLM.
No.
The interface, it's the machine learning behind it. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I was going to ask a question which we don't have the answer for, but people joke that old AI or fake AI is just big if statements. What if the LLM is generating, based on all of the different conditions that are current, massive if statements? Is that AI or not AI? Because that would be an efficient way of being able to go, you know, write me some code that covers an if statement that will capture all of these current threats. And then it just...
I mean, there's still
a lot of just an if statement, but it's a AI-generated one.
Yeah, I think there's still a good argument there that large language models have muddied the water in what really AI is, and it's just a piece of what AI could be.
Yeah.
It's more machine learning than it is anything else. It's still a predictive engine. It's not really intelligent at all. It doesn't comprehend anything.
Well, did you watch Short Circuit?
For sure.
So I use this Claude 3 Opus model because everyone's saying it's really good. Obviously, you ask it, it knows it's not conscious and it can explain why. And I said, well, I asked it how that's different from Johnny 5. And it's like, well, it had a short circuit and that made some weird condition potentially happen that I can't explain. And then I said, well, on another topic, let me ask you a joke about three religious folk. And it was like the vicar, somebody else, and the rabbi throws it up into the air, and what God wants, he keeps. So if you know it, you know it. And I was like, what's funny about that? And it said, well, it's funny because it's a religious joke. And, you know, religion is sometimes funny for people. I'm like, okay, it's definitely not alive because it's not laughing. Yeah, it didn't go. It didn't say, what God wants, he keeps. Like Johnny Five did.
Yes. Yes.
No. Oh, no, my God, did I just do my Johnny Five on the podcast? I'll quickly change that to my Terry Wogan.
In a TikTok.
No.
Immediately.
But no, I can't believe I asked it that question. I said, well, that was asked in the film. And I can send you the logs for it. It was like, that was amazing. How did you trick me like that? The large language model. Oh God! It had more creativity in it than ChatGPT. Whether it's better, it's not. But I was like, okay, it's definitely not alive. Only Johnny Five is alive, and it gold plated and a citizen of New York City.
They're rushing to get Johnny Five out there with something out there. They want to put these agents.
I've got one here. actually, I've taken some of his guts out, but he'll get there. He's got two AI chips and no circuit board.
I mean, Silicon Valley can't wait to get one of these independent agents into a walking, moving robot.
I mean, there was the NVIDIA conference and announcements with Microsoft and NVIDIA.
Yeah, there was a bunch of robots. Did you watch the keynote? They had a plethora of robots, and they had the Disney animation robots that are walking around, I guess, the parks now that do the beep, bop, 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 you know.
I didn't see that, but it sounds like Five Nights at Freddy's or something.
Yeah, a little bit, because, you know, it had all the different vendor robots, you know, and some of them are skinned with the, like, weird plastic, and then other of them are all metal, and, like, there's the whole variety, and they do definitely look a little, like, freakish.
I'm going to have to watch it. I'm hoping that when the robots came on stage, they, like, played the intro music of Short Circuit, where it's, like, 80s. Electronic circuitry style music as they came on.
If I recall correctly, they were trying to enforce the idea of how they're training these in these virtual simulated environments to where the robots can learn to navigate and interact with their environments in a simulated world, and then they come out into the real world and do the same thing. So I think that was the pitch.
Microsoft will no doubt call this AI digital twins. Or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's the theory anyways. It's a simulated environment. Or if you watch some of the Tesla AI stuff, then they do things similar where they've basically just generated a roadmap in one of the 3D rendering worlds, whatever, and feeding it as input to the car.
I think all these, part of it too is
all the Sora models generating a world and then painting it as it moves.
I think now it's about the scale of with these new chips and processors and the expanded hardware. I think that's being able to make those robots do that environmental, you know, scaling at real, so that they can do it thousands and thousands and thousands of times within minutes and really get right onto the production floor and ready for that production floor.
But I think this is where NVIDIA are weakest. In a way, because like I've got a choice. So if I shared my screen, you see, if I do NVIDIA SMI, I got 48 gig of VRAM I got 49 RTX 4090 cards. That's a very expensive and inefficient way of doing anything. I couldn't hang that off the robot. I thought about it, but instead I've got what Rich can see is these. And they're like the edge computing devices where you might train the model and then compile the model down for the things it can do and see on the GPU, the NVIDIA thing. But for the robot, I'm going to use like Google, and they sell these MPU type things in their cloud so they can use. And Microsoft, I would have thought, would be heading in that direction, not partnering with NVIDIA. But I suppose NVIDIA see the writing maybe on the wall, but.
NVIDIA partnered with everyone.
Well, yeah, but they're making the most expensive way of doing everything through the CUDA framework and all that. But the sure. Tensor, like this has a Tensor Core like thing that can run on it, and it mm-hmm. takes no power whatsoever. So, like the GPU doing nothing is using 18 watts. This would be using 0.01 watts. And maybe a watt while it was doing the same thing, which might be using, for example, to understand what was in a picture, say, is there a face there or duck? One might take, the NVIDIA might do it in the same amount of time because this is a compiled down model that can run on it, and it will use 1 watt versus 10 watts. A bit like when you see the adverts for the Galaxy AI, the Qualcomm, mm-hmm. See, the chipset manufacturer, they have a library, a GitHub library, full of the compiled down models that run on their chips that and Samsung are using, so as to have a small language model, runnable mm-hmm. large language model
on your
so it can
device.
Do the offline basic LLM stuff.
Yeah,
so that's is far more efficient.
I want that,
you could probably run it on reasonably modern stuff as well. I don't know whether it won't run on a S23 instead of an S24, but I could plug one of these things into the back of the phone or the Google frameworks that have got support for the. This is a Google Corral.
You think Apple or Samsung will do it first?
Well, Samsung have already done it, right? Samsung are using the Qualcomm chips in the S24, and then there's a GitHub library repo full of the compiled down models, and they're using similar sort of TensorFlow-like model format to the Google Corral thing. So the Google AI stuff is like this is a USB thing, or there's an M2 card that you can put in a small single board computer, but the Google Pixel has a similar chip inside it that does the Google AI stuff. So that's the edge AI. And I think Samsung obviously touting that they've got LLMs on the edge. Sure. NVIDIA's equivalent is their like chat with RTX app, which is great because you can download this and then it will go and download another 10 gig of data. And then if you've got a normal graphics card, an RTX 3060 or 3070, then it will then download the smallest possible model that can't really answer questions that well,
How far behind do you think Apple it really is? Now with the, did you see the DOJ is going to do an antitrust suit against them, which may mean they're going to try to break them up?
I don't know what that's all about. I mean, Microsoft, obviously the biggest company in the world for software, and Apple will now be behind them.
It's about the iPhone specifically, the suit,
but
about having too much market share and dominating the market and unfair practices, obviously.
But if you're a listener and you have iPhones at your company, then I don't think Apple forced you to. In fact, you probably were more interested in having iPhones than Apple were in giving and supporting them for your business.
Yep.
You know, so other vendors do go a bit more above and beyond to Google have, and then Samsung and others have better frameworks, really, for supporting management of mobile devices. Apple have been terrible on that. But our listeners, you've all been buying these for your users for years. So why is it Apple's fault? I mean, when the iPhone came out, they're like, look at this, it's 2G. And everyone's got 3G phones, and we're all like, I'm getting rid of my 3G phone with a touch screen and a little pen where I can scratch it to make it go up the screen, a pocket PC or whatever it was. I desperately want that phone.
Yes.
They're popular because it was a good product. So I'm not an Apple fan at all, but I'm like,
it was
really? Yeah. They've only succeeded in the market through making good products, really. I know since Steve Jobs died, they've sort of went,
I mean,
but yeah, there's not nothing examples, new or clever. But
there were some silly examples in the lawsuit, like, why is it, and this is typical U.S. Congress, this is the question, why is it that when I text someone on a Samsung, my emojis don't show up the same way? Like, that's a concern.
That's not like, a concern of any person. I mean, your politicians are clearly like ours, where it's idiots led by idiots and idiots giving them advice, because that's absolutely stupid. And it's the thing is, there'll be something behind this which we wouldn't care about, exactly lobbyists or something like that. It just seems really spurious. Who serves to gain from this? I mean, a Korean company, Samsung. Well, South Korean, nothing wrong with it. My screens are Samsung. Actually, I've got a Hawaii monitor, so it's probably spying on me somehow, according to the US government. So I've got Samsung phones. My kids went decidedly chosen to go from iPhone to Samsung, South Korean phones. What other manufacturer is the US suggesting that people should be using? You know, what's the other successful US phone maker? Google? I mean, do they get HTC or someone like that to make their phones?
Yeah.
I don't know who they have these. Why? How does this even benefit the United States? That's literally the best company for making stuff that is cool that people want. maybe they should just go after Tesla as well and get rid of all them.
Richest company in the world, you know, just like any, there's targets on your back. So I'm sure there's somebody.
I think maybe they should maybe ban all Ford cars, Ford trucks, maybe get rid of all the Teslas. Are there any GM? Maybe shut them down too. What else does the US make?
I mean, we don't.
Ships. Yeah. Get rid of Boeing. I think they're doing that to themselves.
We make weapons.
Yes.
this went off track.
It has went off track a bit, but it's spurious. It must be spurious. Maybe if you're listening and you know why this is a great idea for, I don't live in the US or care really, go for it. But if you live in the US and you know why it's a great idea to have an antitrust suit,
use antitrust on Windows and now how Windows is split.
I couldn't care less. I'm not in the EU.
That's true.
I don't.
That's very true.
Oh, I mean, obviously, I wish I was still in the EU, but I don't pay a lot of attention to these things because, I don't know, it's some bureaucrats in Brussels who want me to have lots of warnings about cookies all over my webpage or visit US websites that say you can't see this from your region. So I'm not really. That every so often they seem to fine a big tech company a lot of money. Or what was it they wanted to force Apple to stop doing apps in a certain way? Or like somebody really cares about phone charging connectors.
I mean, here's my only complaint
I don't that need-
I will stand behind is if they standardize power inputs and connectors.
You just say that. Them. It's never been a problem in my house. If my kids need a charger for the iPhone, I buy one off Amazon for that. And
it should be global.
You know what? Actually, Migration was Bit Titan once used to give out these pink cables, and they were the best charging cables ever. Well, not in terms of speed, but they had an iPhone connector, micro USB, a USB-C. Those were great. The one bit of swag that everybody would take.
Have a Google one.
Back in the glory days when people actually
our
software.
House is split down the middle, Android versus iPhone.
So if I go somewhere, then I'd always need two charging cables for the kids in the car. That doesn't change. So why the EU care about this, I don't know. Why they want Apple to make a USB-C socket, doesn't affect me. I still need to buy two cables and they'll both break eventually, and then I'll have to buy new ones.
That's definitely true.
Some people clearly care enough to waste millions and millions of pounds enacting laws about it or finding companies. For someone that says they don't care, I have a lot to say, but I'm sorry. The new preview of the AI-powered planner app in Teams is here with extra AI.
I mean, this is the promise they made at Ignite, right? That they were finally going to unify tasks, to-dos, and everything in between in my day and make this so unified.
In my day, is that like Outlook today?
Yes.
Because that went well.
Because I sit there and I look at my calendar every morning, but I don't have the habit to look at Planner every day and use it the same way. And I don't know how we bridge that. And that's my complaint, but that's my opinion. But I got plenty of them, like you said.
I suppose there's a difference.
What they're doing is worth what they're doing.
There's a difference between things that you plan to do and appointments. I know, and things you're scheduled. Yes. Yeah. Because things that you things that are scheduled in your calendar, you have to do. But things that you've got on your to-do list, you can always put off.
Flexible.
You're flexible. Oh, yes. Yes, they're flexible.
But I want to be reminded you can always do them tomorrow. Of them in the same way, because I use calendar almost as a reminder. What's the core things I have to do today, like you were saying, on my calendar? I got to do this. But the other stuff I also have to do and fit it in between.
But we live in different worlds, you see, where I've got lots of to-do lists. Loads of to-do lists. Work to-do list. Yeah. Home to-do list. If I turn my camera, I've got to-do there.
But you're also in pre-sales, and I'm in products. So our worlds are different, too.
Well, pre-sales and doing things on things as well, like work email script. I've got to write a script for work and other things as well. But it's like, I'm just one of those people, if it notified me, basically we'd be sitting in the podcast and go, bing, 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 because there'll be lots of things I've added to a to-do list at some point. And that my entire life would start notifying me, paint the garden, get milk from the shop. And not that I put all these things off and it's like a explosion of all the reminders that are coming home to roost at once, attacking future Steve for his persistence in not doing stuff. More as in, you end up with using these tools from Microsoft or even lists, and you end up with what will be a lot of reminders from different places about things that have varying levels of priority. And your plan may have a different priority in your own mind. Or someone else's plan may have a much lower priority to you as it does to them. That's actually quite a common thing, I suppose, actually, in any of our jobs, where someone's made a plan, they put stuff in it for you to do, and whatever's in that plan is not that important to you in the scale of what you've got to do, but it's massively and massively important to them. So as you which should get the notification in the right place, you've got to, is that something AI can help with? Because that specific problem, the answer to that question, no one ever says out loud, is this really important to you like it is to that person?
Well, did you read some of the examples that they say in the blog? Like, for example, these ones kind of threw me off about Planner. I never thought about it this way, but I understand they're building Planner plus project, right? And they're bringing those together, if I remember the long-term stuff. But planning a team sprint, right, a daily scrum, and managing a product, like I would have never in the past, again, looking at it from just a Planner perspective, would have never been able to do that. But I guess now with project coming into it, that's a use case. Mm-hmm. But that we'll see, I guess.
I mean, I suppose some people use... Well, like I've got my whiteboard with the post-it notes and what if I'm working on something, I have up there is a mini version of that. But that's how, you see a lot of customers who are managing this in the daily standard.
Fair enough.
And they could put that in Planner and they wouldn't need half the information that Planner would take to be able to do it.
But you have Azure DevOps and other tools like that to do Scrum calls and SOS and.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's the missing link. It's like we're bringing it all together, except for
that's why I thought
where it matters to a lot of our customers.
Use case to call out in the blog.
No, that is an excellent point because of course, why would you not do it that way? I think on a lot of the projects where I work, all of it is in Azure DevOps. Once it's got past that point, Planner would be
even if you're using something like AHA as a front end stuff for product management. I mean, it all goes up in some other system. So for dev and engineering and ops to really manage it. So I don't know.
And I've had customers say, well, shouldn't Copilot and AI be able to replace these daily stand-ups and stuff? Like, why are we going to this? Why are we having to get together and talk about that and not get on with it? Why are we having meetings about meetings if AI is supposed to be helping? All it's doing is giving us more time.
I think we're a ways off from that until it can actually plan things and not just do tasks.
Yes.
because that's it. Because that's what SOS is so, really coordinating the teams between larger core teams and shared services and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
Yes.
Maybe one day. Maybe one day we'll get out of a scrum of scrums. AI will.
So Copilot and Planner will come in spring. So when's the first day of spring?
It's already spring, technically. Spring. It was last week.
What, the 18th? What's what, 18th of March? Spring begins. So. I'm just trying. Did I see bunnies and things like that jumping out of hills? 20th of March.
I have to say this. I saw a bunny guy in a costume Sunday driving back from something, the store, and he was on a motorcycle in full bunny costume.
I can't laugh at that. My wife worked at Build-A-Bear and had to wear a bear costume. Oh dear. But she didn't get to bring it home, thankfully.
Oh. I have no comment.
She didn't have to bring it home. Yeah. Nor would you want it, because everyone had to wear it in the shop. So that's a very brave guy coming home in his work bunny costume.
The next podcast.
Yes. So spring is here, but the AI, what does it say coming in spring 20? Oh, these are so vague, because spring, what's the first day of summer? First day of
June
summer.
June 21st.
June the 20th. So it could be here anytime between June. It's worse than Q1 and Q2, isn't it? It's like, we've got Q2 in a bit to get this one done. Or actually, they haven't got before the end of Q2, calendar year. Microsoft, with their vague stuff, you're so unhelpful. When you do your financial year quarters, then the year quarters, and now seasons. Because hold on, spring where? So what season is it in? Is it, I'm just trying to work out, in Australia, what's the season there? It is, because it's the opposite. So
yeah.
It is autumn now, which means that if you're on Australia, according to Microsoft, you must wait until September to November.
I hadn't even thought about that.
It's such a Microsoftism, isn't it? Now, let's get to the best things from the roadmap. Classic Outlook is getting Draft by Copilot. Rolling out now, apparently, but it's not in my Outlook. So that's coming this month. March.
See what else? Microsoft Teams meeting details will be displayed in the pre-join screen for PC and Macs. Includes the scheduled start end time, and that's coming in April as well.
That sounds interesting, but of great news to everybody, except for people who do voice impressions, people who can do, like, say if I decided to do the voice of Terry Wogan or something like that, or decided to perhaps do a cartoon voice, then I'll be absolutely stuffed, because Teams voice isolation will cancel everybody else's voice apart from yours. So no funny voices, or you can do them and no one will hear. So if you decide to do a stupid impression of your boss, they won't know. That's one of the positive sides of it. But also, realistically, it's a really great feature. If you were one of those people that doesn't book a meeting room and just decides to do the meeting or a call, your team's call in the middle of the office where everybody else is also trying to work. And it's a really good solution. It's super, super clever. And it's no way it's an AI feature.
That's all the big roadmap stuff. Like, we got Copilot in Excel coming out in preview.
It's in preview at the moment. As I have to remind people who are being demonstrated this when I'm on customer site, it's in preview. It'll be going GA, which will mean it then will be perfect and work.
How would a customer go, or how would an end user go preview it?
So you know it's in preview only because, as a licensed user, when you open up Excel and you use the Copilot panel on the right-hand side, then it says Copilot preview. But that's what goes into GA. So the quality of the data that you get out of it will be better because maths is harder for large language models, so they're still working on that bit. Should we go for one more?
Yeah, about that intelligent recap of teens, that one I'm interested in. Is there a premium on top of the license for?
So if you've got a Copilot for Microsoft 365 license or a Teams premium license, then you get intelligent recap in Teams. Now, if you were using.
That sounds interesting. So it's going to recap my transcripts?
Yes.
Is that okay?
There. It does at the moment. But like Copilot, for example, will allow you to switch on the transcript for a meeting. And you can ask questions of it.
So what's interesting to me on that is if Microsoft 365 Copilot, I think part of their marketing pitch has always been that this thing will learn over time and become more familiar with you as the end user. So if I have more of these meetings and the more transcripts and the more, will it learn from those? Or is that too far?
Not at the moment. Maybe over time they might make it do that. But yeah, so that's a useful thing because I've done actually this where because I use Copilot, I thought intelligent recap would also just work and it didn't. Copilot also needed the meeting to be recorded originally. With that sort of it's coming in June feature for intelligent recap. I think that's probably all we've got time for in this extremely long episode of the podcast.
Yeah, it was a good conversation. Thanks for having us, Steve.
Yes, I enjoyed it as well. Very much, actually, this one, Rich. So, yeah, thank you for listening. And, of course, don't forget you can subscribe on practical365.com, iTunes and Spotify. So do so today.